Good morning, New Covenant, or whenever you might be listening to this teaching. My name is Jeff Trask, and as always, it's my honor and privilege to be able to share with you today. I have a lot I want to cover, so I'm just going to dig right in today. Title of the teaching is Fruits of Justice, Woes and Blessings. This stems from Luke chapter 6, verses 17 through 26, where Jesus gives a list of things that will bless one while they're in this on this earth and in the future, while there's also this list of those who are not going to be in a good situation when it's all said and done. And we're going to flip it around a little bit. The scripture actually has the blessings first and then the woes. I want to save the better part for last. I'm going to start with the woes and then get to the blessings. And this set of blessings and woes has a lot to do with this notion of the fruits of the Spirit, which says what we do now is like planting seeds and have something grow to produce something good later, or in some cases, something bad later. And these blessings and woes basically reflect this idea of what might end up being good fruit versus bad fruit. And speaking of fruit, you ever wonder why it's used so often in the Bible to symbolize things, whether it be good things or bad things in the Bible? There's about 60 different times that fruit is referenced in the Bible. And it starts all the way back in the days with Adam and Eve eating the forbidden fruit, which, by the way, many people claim that there was an apple, but there's actually four different descriptions in Hebrew language about what that fruit was, and it was unlikely that was an apple. So apples do get a bad rap when it comes to the creation story. But in any case, why not say the vegetables of the Spirit? Well, I think we can all know why that is. There's a reason why kids don't like eating their broccoli. Or how about the beans of the Spirit? That wouldn't work for me growing up. My mom always made too much food, and my dad always made sure we didn't waste any food. So we and my older brother had long nights at the dinner table having to eat up all our various types of beans growing up as kids. So that definitely wouldn't have resonated with me personally. But how about the rocks of the Spirit, or the water of the Spirit, or animals of the Spirit, or clouds of the Spirit? Why fruit in particular? And the main reason is that fruit was just really relevant to the people of those days. In biblical times, agriculture was literally the source of life. And so fruit made a lot of sense to use there. So other aspects of fruit that make sense to people listening to these types of teachings in the Bible is that it's something that grows from something that's been planted. Or it is and it's also something that could be good or bad, like I mentioned, or something that be very pleasant if it's good, or could potentially be very unpleasant if it's bad. Imagine a wonderful tasting fruit versus a fruit that's gone rotten and sour. And I want to parallel this notion of fruit to the notion of money and concept of money. And the reason is that I think money, while fruit is still relevant to us today, we still understand that, but we're not quite the agricultural society any longer like we used to be. And so I want to talk about, instead of fruit, money for various reasons. One, that it aligns pretty well with the same concepts. It's something that grows from something planted, i.e. investments. Something that could be good or bad, like legitimate earnings of money versus blood money or other types of money that's not good. It could be something that's very pleasing if good and very unpleasant if bad. Money well spent versus money wasted or money ruining people. And it's something that everyone can understand and relate to. And I'll get more into the reasons why I want to highlight and replace money here. But first, let's talk about the setting of Jesus here, when what's known in Matthew as the Beatitudes, but in Luke, these blessings and woes. And the scripture starts off by saying that Jesus went to a level place, which, if you just read through it, doesn't sound that particularly interesting, but the actual translations and various meanings of what a level place meant in those days could include anything from a place of corpses, disgrace, idolatry, suffering, misery, hunger, annihilation, and mourning. All right. So this idea of Jesus going to this level place was meaningful in and of itself. And it was also symbolic when you think about God coming back and redeeming the world and healing the world. And here's Jesus at this place that needs redeeming, and that he speaks about these blessings and these woes. Another thing to think about with this crowd is that people were thinking that God's return was going to happen pretty imminently at this point in time as well. Nothing like the 2000 plus years we've been waiting ever since. But they thought, God's return and all these things will happen pretty soon. But really what Jesus is really trying to communicate in this message is that Things may not happen as soon as you think, for one. And in the meantime, it's very critical to live in these different ways. And Jesus here lays out these two sets of options, various woes and various blessings in terms of, you know, these blessings leading to a pleasant end when the world is redeemed by God, this eternal world, and also these woes that will definitely lead to an unpleasant ending in the eternal world. And I want us to take a healthy approach to how we look at the scripture, too. A lot of times we look at scripture the same way kids look at doing homework. And what I mean by that is that when parents encourage or force or urge their children to do homework, kids often interpret that their compliance or lack of compliance to pleasing or not pleasing their parents. While pleasing or not pleasing their parents might be a satisfying outcome, the point is that doing homework is not for the parents. It's for the child. After all, the parents would already went through their schooling or phase of life when they went through all the homework times themselves. They don't need it for themselves. It's for the child's life and for their child's future. You know, they don't have any direct benefit of the child completing homework other than maybe having pleasant, you know, parent-teacher conferences, but it's really for the child. Now, as believers, I often think we approach scriptures as a child being forced to do homework. And we are deciding whether we want to please or not please our parents and please God or not. While God definitely prefers us to choose to do what leads to better outcomes, we are the ones that will deal with the consequences one way or the other. The challenge for us is to how do we not be that child and then realize that these choices themselves are a gift and that we're not left in the dark, not knowing what's right and what's wrong, what should be done, and what should not be done. That's a blessing of itself. You know, guidance is a gift not to be wasted. And choice itself is a gift. Otherwise, we'll be lifeless robots just following the will of God no matter what. So the least that we can do is realize that the instruction or this homework is for our well-being and not designed to make our lives unnecessarily miserable or to be critical of us and things, anything of that nature. So with that said, let's start with the woes. Now, the woes include being rich, being full, laughing, and well-spoken of. Now, you may look at that list and like, well, what's wrong with those things? And we'll get into what I believe Jesus is really trying to communicate when he talks about those things. And first one is about being rich. And the idea is that anytime we are relying upon ourselves more than God, anytime we think we have it figured out due to things like having wealth, where we don't feel like we need anything else but ourselves, that's when we get into various dangerous territory. And in light of Presence Day, I want to share just how critical and how detrimental this idea of relying on riches can be to everyone. In the earlier teaching, I spoke about how my ancestors would practically blow off 4 more years of a racist president, given what they went through. And while not surprised or shocked that this country had, you know, had not made the progress we thought we had made, it is sad to realize how far we have not come. But in light of the celebration of Presence Day, I want to highlight a few did you knows about our presence when it comes to race. But not just race, but it's this idea of money is behind it all. I tell people all the time, you know, race is just really used as a power tool by those in power to maintain their power. And I'm going to give you some examples from the presidential perspective on that. And I think about the presence that we honor and relish at Mount Rushmore, and think about how two of the four of them owned their own slaves, and the other two would have been, you know, racist if they were brought to today's standards based on them being products of their time. And those are for the quote unquote good ones. I want to highlight some of the not so good ones that, again, was based off this unhealthy relationship with the idea of money. And so I'll start with Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson was a president that was responsible for what we know now as the Trail of Tears. And what's fascinating about this story is that these five civilized tribes, which I find that kind of interesting, too, that, you know, civilized versus uncivilized, but the civilized tribes were ones that actually owned slaves. But in any case, these five civilized tribes petitioned the federal government to be able to maintain their sovereignty and stay in the area that they were already in. And they went through the court system and went all the way up to the Supreme Court and surprisingly won their case. The Supreme Court declared that these five civilized tribes have the right to maintain their sovereignty in this area in the United States. But Andrew Jackson, who is known as being one of the most racist presidents we have that we see all the time on the $20 bill, decided he was going to forego the Supreme Court decision and remove these five civilized tribes off of their land anyway. And what oftentimes people don't realize along this Trail of Tears story is that there's about 2,500 to 6,000 enslaved black people who were slaves of the Native Americans who died along the way of that Trail of Tears. And you got to ask the question, why were they removed at all? Well, this idea of manifest destiny was that people want to accumulate and acquire land. And of course, land translates into money and wealth. Another president, Andrew Johnson. You don't know what it was about these Andrews, but he was a compromise choice from Abraham Lincoln, who got a Southerner to be his vice president. Something that was actually done 100 years later when John F. Kennedy got Lyndon B. Johnson, another Southerner, to be his vice president to appease, I guess, the Southern folks. But in any case, when given the opportunity to begin the healing process after this bloody, violent Civil War, President Johnson, instead of maintaining that momentum of the 40 acres and a mule, he basically rescinded all of that and immediately basically condemned any type of order and vetoed any type of order that would give black people, recently enslaved people, any type of land, any type of opportunity for success. And what's interesting also is that Ulysses S. Grant was the president after Johnson, and Ulysses S. Grant was a Union general, and, you know, who fought, you know, in the war. And you'd think that when he became president that this things might be reinstated, but he was not able to do so due to just the white supremacy that had taken over during Johnson's time. And they even talk about how there was a weariness of the issue of giving black people this land by the time Ulysses S. Grant was first president. And this is a pretty sad point in American history. I mean, during Reconstruction, black people were able to obtain political office. And there's a lot of things that were being able to be accomplished during Reconstruction that unfortunately ended with Johnson. And again, it goes back to this unhealthy relationship with money, because obviously withholding land from recently enslaved people and giving it back to white landowners was all about money and dollars. And for those who are following along on my PowerPoint, I left two videos on the PowerPoint that I would encourage you to take a look at. And they talk about this history of Reconstruction and the land not being given to African-Americans, and also talks about what the value of a lot of land that was promised and was actually originally deeded to African-Americans that was rescinded because it wasn't ratified by Congress, what that land is worth today. And just the 40 acres alone is worth millions of dollars, let alone all different people who had that opportunity to have land for about a year and a half or so. On to our third president, a good old Woodrow Wilson, who hosted a 1915 film screening of the movie The Birth of a Nation, which is basically a KKK propaganda film. And unfortunately, it basically coincided with what we call the Great Migration. Many African Americans that were down south due to lack of opportunity, but also the terrorism of the KKK, migrated up north, thinking that the north might be a better place to settle. In some cases, they were. In some cases, they weren't. And some of this kind of came to a head because in the 1910s, 1920s, you had this situation where the economy is kind of breaking down a bit. They had World War One. After World War One, they went into a depression. Matter of fact, the unemployment rate was 11.2% in 1921. We oftentimes think that it wasn't until the 1929 stock market crash that the economy kind of tanked. But after the war ended and all the production for the war wasn't necessary any longer, jobs were more scarce. And due to the Great Migration, along with this kind of economic recession here, the blaming the other became pretty prevalent. Again, familiar story. In this case, the other were black people migrating up north, trying to make opportunities for themselves, getting jobs. And of course, the white people at the time felt threatened by that, not only with their jobs, but also with housing and just this idea of being invaded by the other. There were race riots all over the north and the Chicago and Washington, D.C. and East St. Louis, and of course, famously known Tulsa, Oklahoma, and many, many other areas due to this threatening of the other. And again, you think about what's the the backbone of this rise of the KKK in the 1920s was economically based. It's unhealthy need and obsession for money that will overrule your need, your desire to do the right thing. And finally, fourth president, you have a little picture of a recent picture of Donald Trump with Elon Musk and his son in the Oval Office. And this is not a prevalent notion of this idea how money, unhealthy relationship with money lead to unhealthy outcomes. I don't know what else might be the case. I mean, because even the Andrews and good old Woodrow didn't have the rich openly controlling the government. And the saddest part about this is that it's an age-old strategy. Ever since there was a need for the rich to maintain their power, their strategy was to convince those who weren't like them, who weren't rich, that if you're white, that at least you're not black. And that way, they're able to set division and strife among the masses. Meanwhile, they managed to maintain and keep control of everything. It's almost like the tush push in the Super Bowl. Philadelphia Eagles have a play called the tush push where if they need a couple yards, they almost have this unstoppable play. And over the last couple centuries, has been the same play that we know is coming. We know what we're going to do, and yet we still haven't been able to stop it. My time is short, so I'll just leave it at woe to the rich for now. And we can talk about the woe to the fool and woe to those that laugh and woe to who are spoken well of. But I want to get to some of these blessings. It says, blessed are the poor, blessed are the hungry, blessed are those that mourn, blessed are those that are well regarded. So let's just for a moment get off the extreme bus for a minute and think about what Jesus is saying. You know, do you have to live a life of complete financial destitution to be blessed? Maybe, but I don't think that's necessarily what Jesus is trying to get to here. But what I would contend is that it may not need to be that extreme. You know, those who, for example, who have contributed to New Covenant's reparations fund are more poor as a result, materially speaking. You know, you have less money when you give to the reparations budget than when you had before. And so maybe the idea of being poor is the idea of sacrifice. And you certainly are blessed because I'm showing a picture of my grandkids and my daughter. When you are supporting lives like that, you are definitely being blessed as a result. The other one is being hungry. And maybe being hungry, you know, more or less leads to ongoing quest for knowledge and discovery. You know, I went to a function at First Repair last week and after the public hearing we had in Evanston. And we had this short film screening of Marcus Garvey, along with a professor from Jamaica, actually there to share and give a lecture. He's an expert in, you know, Marcus Garvey, and he shared some information, and we had a Q&A and so on and so forth. And, you know, I was just shocked about how many things I didn't know about Marcus Garvey before that and how much I learned. You know, and so maybe this idea of being hungry, particularly spiritually, is vital for our growth. You know, if you're never hungry, you never eat, and you never grow. And matter of fact, you'll obviously eventually die. And so maybe this idea of being blessed by being hungry has a lot to do with our desire to be hungry spiritually. The next blessing says, blessed are those who mourn. And I think about, I've shown a picture of Sonya Massey and George Floyd and this list of 164 black people who were killed by police officers just in the first months of the year 2020. And I think about this in the other opposite way. Woe to anyone that does not mourn. I mean, I can't imagine the state of being a person who would not mourn such tragedy must be in. So blessed are those that care, right? As that concern can lead to action, and those actions can lead to change. And that change leads to God's kingdom being here on earth as it is in heaven. And finally, blessed are those who get basically talked bad about. And I think about Robin Ruth Simmons, who endured a lot of pushback for her leadership in the reparations movement. If you're able to watch The Big Payback that kind of illustrates her story, you have heard Robin talk about and share how she received death threats and even people threatening her daughter during this time of trying to get reparations bills passed in Evanston. It was not an easy climb by any means. And so while that doesn't sound like a blessing at all, need to say the least, the work that she is doing and did that drew that anger is certainly a blessing. It is a blessing for so far to the tune of about $5 million worth of reparations been paid out in the city of Evanston. And I call $5 million a blessing any day, particularly for African Americans. So while these woes and blessings certainly are designated for the future, they are both still experienced in the now, given that that's the known future ahead. So for example, if someone told you that a week from now, you'll be forced into a plane that was destined to crash and to kill you, how do you think you'd be spending those days prior to your forced plane crash? You know, what would you be thinking about? What would you be doing? Those, that knowledge of the future will certainly impact how you behave in the now. And I think all of us falls into the spectrum of these two extremes, and depend on our period of life, time of life, and what we are dealing with and what circumstances we're around. We either kind of take those days leading up to the plane crash in the way of saying, you know what, just skip it, and we're just going to focus and doing the most, get the most out we can at these few days we have ahead, doing what we want, you know, don't matter if we break the law or treat others poorly, you know, what does it matter after all? And then on the other end, you might take the approach of spending time trying to make amends for any wrongs that you've done, trying to repair broken relationships, making one last ditch effort to make the world a better place before your future crash and death there. So these woes and blessings are not just strictly to think about what is ahead for our eternal destiny, but they certainly will impact our behavior now. And based on what Jesus is saying, he gives instructions about what the woes and what the blessings actually will translate into. You know, this all makes you really think about the church, what the church really looks like. You know, is it these large institutions with ridiculous amounts of wealth and prestige that have participated in and perpetuated the evils of the world? Or is it people who are ridiculed and threatened for seeking to make this world more just? So I encourage us, let's strive to be more poor. And let's also be and stay hungry. For those looking at the slides, I have a little video of my grandchildren and my son, grandson, particularly eating some heart food for the first time as a baby. Let's also care and mourn for each other because we share each other's pains. One of our longtime Champaign County Christian Health Center board members, Cliff Burdett, passed away recently. And so we mourn, you know, with the family and ask for prayers. I also encourage us to let's work hard at being ridiculed for our work towards justice. You know, as Elijah Cummings will say, let's get into good trouble. And finally, let us sacrificially, hungrily, caringly, and boldly await Christ's return so that we may not only receive riches in heaven, but make this world to be what it was designed to be in the first place.